Welcome back to Perfect Takes. I'm your host, Stephen Patton, joined as always by my co-host and dear friend, Jacob Acquire. And we keep creeping up and approaching the NFC South breakdown. That's on Thursday. Today, we talk about the NFC West. And this one's an interesting one. There's a lot of reshuffling change across, I believe, all four teams to warrant teams rising in the division, teams falling in the division. And I think from a content standpoint, this is going to be one of those divisions that I think it could go back and forth. And it's not decided on like who's going to win it necessarily until we get down the stretch. Jacob, how's your week been? What are your initial thoughts on this division? And yeah, we'll just kick it off from there.
What did you say at the beginning? We're creeping and just getting closer. I guess I'm just creeping right now, waiting for that division breakdown. We have our big fantasy football draft tomorrow night, and I'm excited for that. But mainly last weekend, college football started. I know you're not the biggest college guy, but having actual football games be on TV, have it being real and not preseason, that's like the key indicator that football is here for the next, 6 months or something like that. So I'm really excited to get into today's topic.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And we're going to start with the bottom dweller from last year. And they're always those candidates where they're like worse the first. And it's funny, whenever they're first, nobody ever talks about them as like falling off a cliff. I know we did last offseason. Another reason why you should keep Perfect Takes in your rotation. But in regards to the 49ers this year, you look at strength of schedule, who they play, and we'll bring up those teams here in a moment. But that paired with some of the guys that were injured last year coming back from injury, and while they do have a list, and it is a extensive list of injuries going into this season, I don't think it's something that they're not used to or not going to be able to weather, especially with the additions they had in the draft.
Yeah, you talk about last season where they had significant injuries, right? Christian McCaffrey didn't play all year. Brandon Ayuk got hurt, I think week four, maybe week five, and missed most of the year. Trent Williams was banged up. Kittle was banged up. They were still ninth in EPA per play. This was a top 10 offense pretty much across the board. And now they are a little bit hurt in the wide receiver department to start the season. Juwan Jennings has a mysterious growing ankle sprain as he wants a new contract. Brandon Ayuk's not going to start the year, but they have Christian McCaffrey back. George Kittle's fully healthy and recently extended, if I'm not mistaken. They have the key components there on offense that are healthy. And I have all the faith in the world that Kyle Shanahan, with those pieces, can get this offense rolling to start the year, even with a lack of premier receivers. You got to remember, Kyle Shanahan's a run game guy. The basis of his offense is built off of their run game. And when you have somebody like George Kittle who can really be a like receiver one option, I don't think guys like Juwan Jennings and Ayuk not playing week one is going to be that huge of a deal, especially like when you alluded to their schedule has some stinkers this season.
It does. And we'll hop into that in a second. But to go back to your point about Kyle Shanahan not being a guy that's reliant too much on the wide receiver position, this is a offense that had the most dropbacks under center last year. This is a Kyle Shanahan staple, the ability to blend the run and the pass and disguise it in such a way that it puts the defense in conflict. And so you brought up Christian McCaffrey being back. They just traded for Brian Robinson. You have George Kittle. That's their identity. And I think as long as their superstars stay relatively healthy throughout this year, that schedule that you're talking about, yes, they start the year off with the Seahawks, and that could go either way. Week one is one of those situations where somebody could come out with a better game plan, and it just doesn't matter what happens. Week two, Saints. Week three, Cardinals. Week four, Jaguars. Week five, you're playing the Rams. Week six, you're playing the Bucks, Falcons, Texans, Giants, Rams again, Cardinals, Panthers, Browns. Like, I'm listing off a lot of teams, and some of these teams I'm listing off, like the Texans, maybe the Rams. Obviously, we talked about the Seahawks at the beginning of that. Those are teams that could be in the playoffs, but everybody else, they should be expected to or favored to win. And then the stretch, like you go down, it's Titans, Colts, Bears, and then Seahawks to close the season. And it's just like, why couldn't this team win 12 or 13 games and be the number one seed in the NFC like it did a couple years ago? And so, Jacob, what are your reservations? Because any of the questions I had on the defensive side of the ball, I felt like got reasonably answered this past offseason. They couldn't stop the run worth a lick. And you go out and you draft Mikel Williams, draft a few interior defensive linemen, and they seem to have fixed that aspect. Obviously, they didn't flash in preseason, but those bodies in a Robert Saleh defense, I feel a lot more comfortable.
Yeah, my reservations would be on the defensive side of the ball. They do get Robert Saleh back, who is probably the best or second best defensive play caller of the Kyle Shanahan era in San Francisco. You add a whole new front, really. Mikel Williams, Alfred Collins, CJ West, those were their early draft picks, all of who can excel against the run. Nick Bosa still on the team, so you still have a premier pass rusher. But yeah, that would be where my reservations are. Maybe a lot of the early injuries as well, if you're not full power to go week one. But you brought it up. All those teams you named there, do you know how many games against last year's playoff teams that the Niners played this year?
What, like three? Well, it'd be three because it's the Rams and the Texans, right?
The Rams and Texans, so that's three. Oh, and then the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So four games against playoff teams from last year. And, you know, year to year doesn't necessarily correlate. What I like to look at is quarterbacks and the quarterbacks that you're projected to face. I would say Baker is probably the best quarterback that they're going to face all year. Maybe Stafford, but we don't know about Stafford's health. So let's say Baker, Stroud, and then who's third? Trevor Lawrence, if you're not including Stafford's health in this. Like, Trevor Lawrence, I mean, is the third best QB they're going
to
face.
This is kind of disrespectful to Bryce Young. I want to put maybe, that out
maybe,
there. But
maybe at that point in the year, what is that, week 12? Maybe Bryce Young will have overtaken Lawrence, but I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because he won a playoff game before. But the point I'm trying to make is that this is not a star-studded group of quarterbacks that you're going against. And when you have an experienced defensive play caller who, by the way, when he was in charge of the defense with the Jets, top five every year across the board, if you bring him back and instill new, tendencies there, or old tendencies that worked before with youth on the defensive front, I really don't have a ton of reservations about this team.
No, I think this is a team that's going to be well coached on both sides of the ball. And it's just a matter of their guys staying healthy enough to go on a run. I think Nick Bosa is primed to be a defensive player of the year candidate. I mean, when you put yourself in a position where it's like, hey, you could win 12, 13 games, you're going to be on center stage. This is a team that has the national spotlight over the past couple of years, so they can rise back to that again. And like you said, this is a team that is on the up and up. The team that I would say probably like next up that I think they want to take a similar step, but I have reservations probably about the offensive side of the ball, is the Arizona Cardinals. I think defensively they went out and they added a ton of players. So like you're talking about guys like Josh Sweat, Calais Campbell. You go in the draft, you draft a guy like Jordan Birch. They drafted the one cornerback out of –
Will Johnson from Michigan.
Michigan. All right. I'm getting him confused with the Buccaneers cornerback that they drafted out of Notre Dame. And I don't know why I'm getting him confused. And I'm blanking out on his name too.
They both had Benjamin Morrison. Both had some knee stuff in the draft, and that's why Will Johnson fell. But across the board, Will Johnson was a top 10 talent in that draft. I think he showed it on tape both of the last two seasons that he was at Michigan. But then you didn't even mention their first round pick, Walter Nolan, a guy who doesn't even have to start. I think you're right here. On the defensive side of the ball, this was probably second, third worst in the league next to the Panthers. You can throw the Bengals and the Jaguars in there if you want, but this unit just didn't have NFL players. You're bringing in maybe 10, 11, 12 guys that are first and second team deep in the rotation. This is an entire new defense. Even if these guys don't mesh and coalesce, they're better than what was out there last year, which could take your defense from, let's say, 30th to 25th or something like that. But some of the players, at least some of the players they brought in, are pretty good. Josh Sweat could have been the Super Bowl MVP if it weren't such a quarterback heavy award, right? And he is familiar with Jonathan Gannon. He knows the kind of stuff they want to run. Will Johnson, like you said, really good corner. He's going to mesh well with all of the kind of an underrated secondary that they have there in Arizona. And then all the defensive line guys are going to be way better against the run. Calais Campbell, Dalvin Tomlinson, Walter Nolan, explosive pass rusher. You mentioned Jordan Burch. He had a crazy preseason. He was one of the best performers in the preseason. And I know that's not always indicative of regular season performance, but when that's your, we'll call him third or fourth edge rusher, or he'll probably be a defensive end in an odd front system. But if he's your fourth best defensive lineman, that's huge. And they still are bringing along Darius Robinson, who didn't play much of at all his rookie year because he was injured. So this is really an entirely new defense with, I think, stable coaching on that side of the ball. So I think they have a lot of room to grow. I agree with the offensive side of the ball, though. This is a team that added not a lot there. All 11 starters from last season are projected to start again. Their highest investment on offense, I believe, was Jacoby Brissett, which was like a $4 million contract, which is not a ton, especially on an offense that, it, when you think about it, wasn't a world-beating group. But they were still top 10 in a lot of efficiency metrics, mainly built upon that run game. I think if James Conner's healthy, if Trey McBride, who was briefly the highest paid tight end, if he's healthy, I think they should be fine. But for a team that wants to make the playoffs, they have to be better than fine. And I think that starts with Kyler Murray and Marvin Harrison Jr. getting on the same page.
Yes and no. I think Marvin Harrison addressed some of the contested catch concerns this past year. He put on a lot of weight. It wasn't necessarily like the Christian McCaffrey bulk, but it was a good
It was
bulk.
Up there.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's like, obviously, I think Giannis is probably the best by far that I'd say Christian McCaffrey. I'm sure there's some other players. But again, Marvin Harrison, he did what he had to be better in those instances. And I think he will be this year. My concern is Kyler does not do extraordinarily well, I think, putting the ball on the boundaries. And sometimes that puts Marvin Harrison in these positions where he's getting targets, but he's not getting the ball in his hands. And I would like to see Drew Petzing pretty much get Marvin Harrison in positions like Trey McBride, where he's coming across maybe the middle of the field or into openings where Kyler Murray can get him the ball comfortably. And the more we see that evolution on the offensive side, I think that would offset the fact that they didn't have any additions. So where the defense, we've seen a lot of these creative ideas with Nick Rawls, why they're trying to make do with the pieces they do have. It's like, okay, with those creative concepts and now the pieces they have, this could work. This could be really special. And so I want to see that step on the offensive side, because Drew Petzing is heralded around the league. This is a guy that came from, I believe, Kevin Stefanski's pretty much coaching staff and worked underneath him and has kind of some of that background to see him lean into what Kyler Murray does best. And another aspect of that, and this has nothing to do with the rest of the offensive pieces, but it's Kyler Murray's legs. Like, let's see more design runs. Like, let's see Kyler Murray do what Kyler Murray does best. And I think if they can lean more into that, this could be a successful team to where this could be a top 12 offense and maybe like an average defense. And that gets you pretty much, I think, right there on the doorstep of a wild card appearance. And that's where this team needs to be.
You have to remember, too, this team won 8 games last year. It wasn't like they were a 4-13 club with that horrible defense. They were still contending in games. It's like the difference between them and the Jaguars, I think it's a good comparison. They both had horrible defenses, but the offense for the Cardinals was at least efficient. They knew how to move the ball down the field, especially in the run game. If you're going to be a bad or not explosive team, you have to be a good run game team, and I think the Cardinals are that. The one wrinkle I will mention is I believe their O-line coach, Clayton Adams, is now the Cowboys offensive coordinator. So there might be a little bit of a change in philosophy with how they do their blocking up front, but they have all the pieces still left. Drew Petzing is Drew Petzing. Yeah, he's still the play caller. So I think if Kyler can take that step, I think if they can call some stuff that fits him better and can use Marvin Harrison in a better way, this can be a team that is knocking on the door of the wild card, like you're saying.
And that's, I think, where you have to be when you look at Monty Austin Ford and Jonathan Gannon. This is year 3 of the regime. They were taking a roster that was kind of in salary cap hell, had a bunch of old players. You had to start trending in a new direction by accumulating draft capital and drafting the right pieces. And this is really going to put that to the test. Like, have the pieces you've drafted and you've signed, are they going to pan out the way you hope? And if they do, then that means you're in the playoffs. It means that you're hopefully ascending to where the holes that you find out you have this year, you're addressing in next year's draft and next offseason. And to continue to grow and develop some of these younger players, that's key. So that's the step I think everybody wants to see from the Cardinals. We'll see if they're able to do it. I think the biggest hesitation for me when I look at this team and the X factor is going to be Kyler Murray. I feel like he's got to play better for this team to succeed. Like, there are very few excuses, I think, at this point. Like, yes, would it be great to have another wide receiver two outside of Marvin Harrison and Trey McBride? Would it be great to have maybe some offensive line depth and some more pieces on the back end of the defense? Absolutely. But those are luxuries that I think can come in the future. Kyler Murray, for me, is the guy that has to show he's worth the money they paid him a few off seasons ago.
For sure. I mean, I think a lot of teams would like to have more than one capable wide receiver in particular. McBride is a star in his own right, probably a top three tight end in the league. But yeah, outside of Harrison Jr., it's not my favorite group of receivers. That also extends to the next team we're going to talk about, but I like this group probably worse, and that's the Seattle Seahawks, who tied for the division lead last year. They just lost the tiebreaker. And this is this team probably has the most change across the board of all four teams we're going to talk about. The Cardinals defense got flipped, right? But the Cardinals offense remained pretty much the exact same. The Seahawks offense is just brand new, right? They trade away Geno Smith and then sign Sam Darnold. They trade away DK Metcalf and sign Cooper Kupp. They get rid of Jeremiah Jones and Roy Robertson Harris, really good run defenders, bring in DeMarcus Lawrence off the edge. And then some guys in the draft, like Gray Zabel should start, the guard from, where was it? North Dakota State, if I'm not mistaken. Nick Emenwari from South Carolina and Jalen Milroe, who I think, well, we won't see him a ton because Drew Locke has been outpacing him in the preseason, but it's basically a whole group of replacements at key positions. And I'm curious as to how you think it's going to work, because I think Sam Darnold's quite the step down from Geno. I think Cooper Kupp is quite the step down from DK Metcalf. So I'm curious to see how you think it's going to go.
So I brought up under center and under center dropbacks and why the 49ers lean into that and how that disguises the run in the pass. The Seahawks are trying to do the same thing. Mike McDonald understands the value of that kind of offense. So they bring in Clint Kubiak, who, believe it or not, coached under Kyle Shanahan, and Kyle Shanahan coached underneath Gary Kubiak.
His brother is the offensive coordinator for the 49ers now, Clay Kubiak.
So the connection is there. Kubiaks. And so you have that. And then I think Kyle Shanahan's kids, they're going to coach underneath those two guys. And it's going to be like, I hate to say nepotism, but it's like, these are football geniuses. Like, they just keep producing these masterminds that are able to design some really incredible offenses. So going back to the point about being under center, Clint Kubiak, he comes from New Orleans, and you look at how Geno Smith performed under center last year, and it wasn't great. I'm like, yeah, you could chalk it up to the interior offensive line being poor, but I think it's just not where Geno Smith thrives in. He thrives in a more shotgun environment. And so that, I think, is a big reason why the Seahawks ended up trading Geno. And so they bring in Sam Darnold, who he had a ton of under center dropbacks in Kevin O'Connell's offense last year. So I think being comfortable in that setting and understanding read progression, and also having time with the 49ers back when Clint Kubiak was with San Francisco during their last Super Bowl run in 2023, that kind of chemistry, I think, is the reason why Sam Darnold's the quarterback. Anybody who's listened to this podcast and just knowing that we're Panthers fans, obviously know, like, our disdain for Sam Darnold, know his shortcomings as a player, but as somebody in this NFL that can make throws, that can do what you ask him to, I think you have that in Sam Darnold. And when you look at a rising star in Jaxon Smith-Njigba, You look at, I think, some of the bigger personnel players that they've added. Like we talked about Gray Zabel. They obviously let go of Noah Fant, but they drafted Elijah Arroyo out of Florida State. They got Jalen Milroe, and Mike McDonald came out today and said, hey, there are going to be some packages and things that we have them do leading up to like game weeks to potentially have them on the field because they see them as that valuable of a player. And so you can see them leaning into the run game and doing some, I would say more like ground and pound things than like air it out. And so if they lean into that a little bit more and their personnel stays healthy, this is a team that could surprise and be close to the 500, maybe be a wild card team just because of how good the defense is. But there's a lot of ifs riding on that offensive structure because we saw how unstable it was in New Orleans, especially with how thin their roster was and how quickly it all fell apart with injuries.
I agree with you on offense. I think the line is going to be better here than it was for Darnold in Minnesota, but obviously Darnold doesn't have Jefferson and Jordan Addison. So that kind of offsets it. And I think Kevin O'Connell is a much more creative and better coach than the offensive staff in Seattle. The defense, I think, is the sticking point, the X factor, if we want to talk about that. And I think it's kind of been overrated a bit this offseason. It wasn't a top five unit in like any metric last year. I think third down they're really high. But other than that, efficiency wise, they're right around 10th, 11th, 12th. Success rate was 16th. And while I do like the DeMarcus Lawrence addition, Uchenna Nwosu passed his physical a couple days ago. So I think he's going to be healthy to play this season. I don't know if they have the horses to be like the Ravens unit that Mike McDonald coached a couple years ago that he was envisioning, a unit that had as Nnamdi Matabuike now, who was a Pro Bowler, or it might have been an All-Pro that year with Mike McDonald, a Roquan Smith, a Patrick Queen. They had Kyle Hamilton, like the spine of the defense. I think they're constructing that. I think Leonard Williams and Byron Murphy are really good up front, but the linebackers at the next level aren't that good yet. And then the safeties, I don't think are there yet, but they have really, really good players across the defense. So I wouldn't count them out being a top 10 unit, but I'm not sure that they're a good enough unit to carry an offense that might fall short of league average.
So
that's my hesitation with this team.
I understand when you bring up the Seahawks team, especially in regards to like the linebacking room, having guys that can play within that defense. There's only who's their one linebacker currently on there that like everybody knows? He traded for
Ernest Jones,
and he's good in coverage. So that's the one guy you can kind of bank your hat on. For me, when you look at the secondary, I think Julian Love, they added in free agency last year in year one. Reek Woolen is good in coverage. He just does not defend the run well. Devin Witherspoon's an excellent corner. Those are three pieces in that secondary. I don't know if they're going to ask Nick Emmanuel to be more of like a linebacking role. And if they trust them in terms of vision and stuff, that's an excellent guy to pair next to Ernest Jones. I think having the best 11 players on defense helps you out. And that defensive line is excellent. I think the defensive ends they have, Byron Murphy going in the year two and the flashes he showed last year. Like there's, I think, a lot to like about this team and this unit. And while they weren't a top five unit last year, they were top 10, especially down the stretch. And so we saw the Ravens kind of come alive after losing a lot of brain, having the brain drain it had going into 2024. I think this year going into year two, it's going to be similar with Mike McDonald. His first year was solid in Baltimore. The second year is when things got elite. And so I think this is a group that can be borderline top five, but I understand your hesitation because they have to figure out the safety and the linebacking room for this to come together.
Yeah, I'm just not sold on the talent outside of the front. Other than I think Devon Witherspoon is great. Certainly worth the fifth overall pick they spent on him a couple years ago. But that's my hesitation there. This is a team that won 10 games last year. That if the tiebreakers went the right way, we could have seen them in the playoffs. So it's certainly not a bad roster by any means. For me, it's the second and third level of the defense. And then how are the replacements going to, or are they going to outperform the departed? Two movie references there, if people are cinephiles listening. But that's my major hangup. I think receiver is another one for me. Marquez Valdez-Scantling, I think, was supposed to start. And I believe they released him today. We're recording on cut day where you have to get down to 53 players on every roster. So outside of JSN, the receiver room looks bleak, but I think if it can all come together, if the defense can take that step, this is a team that we could see attacking the wild card again. But we said that about every team thus far in the division. And the last team we have to talk about was the team that actually made the playoffs last year, and that's the LA Rams. I think this team, more than any of the four, has major concerns when it comes to the injuries of key players, right? Matthew Stafford didn't practice all summer until like a week ago. And some people believe he wasn't practicing even then, that it was an old clip, that he hasn't been with us for weeks. If you've caught along to that meme that's been circulating around on Twitter. But regardless, Stafford not healthy this offseason. He might be good now, though. Your star receiver, Puka Nacua, has been an injury risk throughout his entire career. That's why he was a fifth-round pick. The receiver that you bring in, Devontae Adams, has not been a clean bill of health over the last few years, and he's getting up there in age. Their starting left tackle, Alaric Jackson, has missed a lot of time this offseason. A lot of key pieces on the offensive line or on the offensive side of the ball are either old and or like really injured. It's not like, oh, this guy could be like legitimate injury concerns. And that's where I think you start with this unit, especially when you take a look back and realize that over the course of the entire season, they were 16th in EPA per play. This was not a superstar offense by any means. Now, Puka Nacua missed, I think, six games. The games that he missed, they were 2-4. When he played, they were 8-2. So when the team's fully healthy, you know what they can be on offense with McVay calling the plays. But that's the question. Can this offense stay fully healthy for an extended period?
You're trying to thread a needle. Unfortunately, like when it's all healthy and it all works together, just like it does in Miami, it's fireworks. It's poetry of motion. Like there are so many ways to describe the Shanahan McVay offenses in the NFL, but when those players aren't healthy, it doesn't look the same. And so Matthew Stafford being this banged up and not having contact in almost like we're talking like 9 months, like what he played football in January and it's end of August. Like this is getting to the point now where it's like you're 8-9 months away from like the last contact you had and your back's not in a good place. So like what happens when you start getting hit by guys, because that's going to happen when you play this physical sport. And so that's the concern with me for that. Your backup's Jimmy G. I don't know about that. Your third string guy, I think, is Stetson Bennett. Your wide receivers like Puka Nacua, Devontae Adams. I think they drafted Terrence Ferguson to kind of be their future tight end one. You can like where they're heading there. I think who is the speedster? It wasn't
Tutu Atwell.
Yeah,
got a, I would say, a handsome deal, a 1 year, $10 million deal. I think a lot of people expected it would be less than that. But all the stuff you're saying, and you got to take into account they have a future, or not a future, another first in this upcoming draft. I think the offense is kind of gearing toward the future. And when you see that, it just gives me hesitations about what they can be this season in particular. The defensive side of the ball, I think, is going to be a bit better, but the offense is where my questions are.
We've seen this. This team is very dependent on quarterback play. And if Matthew Stafford can't stay healthy, I don't trust the other two guys behind him. And so that leaves room for if Stafford gets hurt early on and this team kind of falls, are they positioning themselves to get a quarterback? Because they have Atlanta's first now. With that trade moving out of the first round pick, and you feel comfortable about a lot of the pieces you have on both sides of the ball, Jared Verse, Braden Fisk, you just brought in Puna Ford to help you in the run game. Obviously you could improve the linebacking room and some pieces in the secondary, but where you said gearing towards the future, that is kind of where they've put their chips in, rebuilding the offensive line and defensive line trenches so that if they need to go and move for a quarterback next year, they can do so and feel comfortable about the offense they're placing him in. But yeah, this is just too unstable for me to buy any stock. If they're healthy, they're going to be great. But banking on them all being healthy is a hard thing to do.
You mentioned the defense. They were 25th in EPA per play last year. I don't think that's super surprising because they relied on big plays a lot, like sacks, fumbles coming from guys like Jared Verse, Braden Fisk, the two Florida State rookies. They add Puna Ford, who I think is a huge addition, not just in terms of him being a huge person, but in the run game, they were horrific last year. So I think that's really going to help. Their front, I like a lot of young players, but the back end is where I have my, especially the secondary, is where I have my concerns. But like you're saying, I think this is a team that couldn't, how do I say this? This year might seem disappointing to a lot of fans who just look at this team and see that they won the division last year, that they were scarily close to beating the Eagles in Philly in the playoffs if Matthew Stafford didn't throw up a ham and cheese to Puka Nacua on that fourth down. They very well could have won that game. But I think this is a team that might take a step back and gear toward the future, especially it's not just any first round pick they own. It's the Falcons. And I know we're Panthers fans and hate on the Falcons, but there's and we'll talk about it more on Thursday. But there's not a lot of evidence for me to believe that the Falcons are going to be a superstar team by any means. So when you look at a QB class that has half a dozen or more guys that can go in round one, and a team that might need a QB for the future, I think it's kind of written in stone that this team might not perform to the level we expect this year. But I feel like we also said that about the Rams over the past couple years. And when they're healthy, they're good. But when they're not healthy, they aren't. So going back to how we started the Rams segment, that's really what it's going to come down to.
And it's just for me, the Matthew Stafford back situation, like when they were talking about before the bus even came out to the practice field, like the epidural he was taking for his back pain, like that's what they give pregnant women as they're giving birth. Like that's like the thing about the pain he must be going through to get something like that just tells me something's not right about this. So we'll see. We said before going on air, I was telling Jacob, I really could see this division almost getting flipped on its head. That the team that wins the division, I think, are the San Francisco 49ers. I think their schedule is too easy and they added too much talent for them to miss it. And so with that, I think they're number one. I think the Cardinals and Seahawks are number two and three. I'm going to lean into Jonathan Gannon building this the right way in year three and them just getting a nudge above the Seahawks, because I think there's just too many changes on that offense. I love the defense. I love what they did there. But like you said, after Jackson Smith and Jigba, you're throwing the Cooper Kupp, you're throwing the Torrey Horton. Those are names, but I don't know if those are like actually good, like wide receiver two, wide receiver three options. So we'll see. Jalen Milroe will play probably like a Taysom Hill role. And then the Rams, I think, finish last. I cannot buy Matthew Stafford staying healthy. And so what's the Rams win total right now? Let me pull that up. Are we ready to head in the perfect takes, or are we still got to touch on a few things? All right. So their win total right now, I'm pulling it up for the Los Angeles Rams. I should have had this up. Why can't I find them? I hate when they do it by like logo and it's like sorted by the city.
I can say my take while we're waiting, if you like.
Take it away.
So I couldn't agree more with your order there. I think we're going to see a flip. Even if the Niners aren't fully healthy, I just can't buy into that schedule when a hard QB for you to face is going to be like Cam Ward down the stretch or something. I don't know. So I'm going in the same order you are, and that actually goes into my take. Rams are, we talk about worst to first all the time, but the Rams, I think, are going to go from first to worst in this division. This is the most open division to me, and I think that all the other teams did enough to where they can surpass the Rams this year and surpass each other. I actually think the Cardinals are a sneaky seventh seed wild card team, so I'm glad that you're in on them as well. I've been drinking all the Kool-Aid from the Cardinals hype this offseason, so happy about that one. But yeah, I'm going to say Rams go from first to worst. I'm trying to remember the last time that happened, because, man.
What are you talking about? It just happened with the 49ers last year.
Oh, well, yeah. But like outside of this division, because so many teams have like chokeholds on their divisions. But you're right, the Niners, went from first to worst, and now they're going to go from worst to first. But my take is that the Rams follow suit, and the floor falls out from underneath them.
I like it. So I am pulling up the Los Angeles Rams win total, and it's looking like it's set by Vegas at 9.5, which is a little steep. And I mean, if everybody's healthy, they're going to do that. And they've done that the past 2 years. But it's kind of like one of those things, like we saw it all kind of implode in San Francisco last year. It just seems like the ticking time bomb goes off in 2025. So I think they hit the under on that. They finish fourth, like what we're talking about, going from first to worst. Did you pair in the 49ers? Like, are we both kind of in on this, that like they're pretty much just flip-flopping space, like spots, and then the Cardinals and Seahawks end up in the middle of those two?
Yeah, like just flipping the division over, turning the hamburger upside down, if you will. I just, in elementary school, I remember like an exercise with fractions where you had to piece them together like that and then flip them. That's why I say that. But yeah, I think Niners and Rams swap, and then I think that Cardinals and Seahawks can swap, but I could see it either way there.
Awesome. Well, I'll go with the under 9.5 wins. I'll leave you to have them going or finishing fourth in division. So for some reason, the NFC West just goes on a tear and three of the teams win 10 plus games. You can still sweat that one out.
This is one of the first, not first, but in recent history, one of the takes or a pair of takes that go along with each other, usually where at opposition or they just aren't related whatsoever. But I'm glad we're on the same page today. We didn't even talk about this, by the way, before we started. It just happened naturally. But I think a lot of people can see the limitations of that Rams roster. You talk about the 49ers, right? And they were still a top 10 offense last year, even with all the injuries, but their defense wasn't very good. And I think that when you bring in coaching change, I think that can help a ton for a team that still has talent like the 49ers. But we'll have to see. I think that's it for us. Thursday, we'll talk about the NFC South. It'll be more Panthers-centric, right? Because we're getting into the Panthers. We can talk about some of the cuts, and I'm sure some of the people who made the 53 won't be there on Thursday because you got to set up your practice squad. A certain fan favorite local college hero might be on the practice squad. I had a take that he would make the team eventually, but you made me change it to the 53, so I got that one wrong. But we'll see what happens with Hunter Renfrow, with Adam Thielen, if the Vikings are willing to come off the hip and offer something above a seventh-round pick. We'll see what happens with the Panthers players. But until Thursday, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Twitter, wherever you get your content. And, yeah, keep pounding.